I'm an addict in recovery named Zakiya.
Hi,
hi, family. Which one? This one? Okay.
I always have to first give thanks to the God of my understanding for bringing me full circle back to recovery and back to life. I'd like to first thank the area for allowing me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. Because I don't take this lightly. I really, really believe that this is about my life. I have many things that have occurred to me in my life, and I had no idea that the journey that I was going to embark on when I walked in these doors 21 years ago was just a reintroduction to something that the God of my understanding had already tried to introduce me to. I already had a sponsor, I had a home group, you know, I had cliches, I had the steps. And what I'm talking about is how God had my mother was my sponsor. He gave me a parent to guide me in my life. My mother is a woman that I associate with people like Harriet Tubman and Rosa Parks because she was a woman of stature. She was a woman who tried to introduce me to quality of life because that's what life means. Life means the quality and the manner of living. And if any of you have done like I've done since you've been here, and that's look in the dictionary, if you look up that word, that takes up half of a page in the Webster Dictionary. It not only talks about what life is, it tells you how to get in life, it tells you how to be true to life. So I can look at that one word and I can begin the journey of recovery just by looking up some meaning of the words. And I remember my mother trying to introduce me to some quality of life. I was raised with 10 brothers and sisters. That was the fellowship. Because they had all different kind of personalities, and I didn't like none of them. Not my mothers, not my fathers, and not my brothers and sisters. My mother tried to introduce me to a power greater than myself. She told me, look, this is a place you can go and believe in something greater than yourself that can probably make your life a little bit more better. She gave me some steps. She told us, don't get off of the steps. And I remember being teased a lot because they start calling us the stepsisters. They were the stepsisters. They can never get off of the steps. And I used to have resentments about that. And I remember her giving me the cliches and she kept saying, boys and books don't mix. She kept saying, don't go around that corner to them people around there. So what I was introduced to was something that God tried to give me, but in my spirit, I was rebellious at an early age. I had character defects of intellect and analytical thinking at an early age. I remember when my mom was telling us to go to this place of worship, and I'm talking about 5 or 6 years old. I used to say, well, how come she making me go, but she not going? See, I started asking questions at an early age. Never out loud, mind you, because I had the kind of mother that if you asked a question out loud that she felt wasn't a question that a child was supposed to ask, then you would get the wrath of a punishment that lasted a lifetime. So I asked a lot of questions, and because I was so intelligent and analytical, I gave myself the answers. And all the answers that I gave myself was nothing of quality. It wasn't a manner or a quality of life that was going to lead me in the right direction. I had the spirit of rebellion before I picked up a drug. I remember my mother telling me not to go around that corner, and I was so curious about what was around that corner. My mother was a community activist. She helped people. I resented her helping people. I resented the fact that she was out there helping people and me not understanding that that's what fulfilled her spirit and that was her calling that God gave her. Because I was so intelligent, I started questioning the fact that she ain't got no business out there helping them. Look at men. She's not even doing the things she needed to do for me. But I never was hungry. I always had clothes on my back. And she always tried to give me good, orderly direction. But I, being intelligent, resisted it at an early age. So I started going around that corner. And I started seeing what they was doing, and it looked like fun to me. So I began to embrace the opposite of what my mother asked me to do. And it also, it took me to a place where I had no self-esteem. One of the things I always remember about my mother today is that I never saw her in a posture with her head down. My mother always walked with her head up high and her chest out. Despite the fact that my father was beating her behind every chance he could get. Coming back from being drunk and just whipping on her for no reason. And she still continued to guide me. But I blamed her, again, me thinking, for the posture that my dad was in. His drinking had to do with her because she was so strict. She didn't want us to do anything. But I didn't know that my mother was trying to guard my spirit even then. But because I had no knowledge of what God's will was for me, I proceeded to follow the blower path. I proceeded to listen to the whisper of the lower power. So I began to look for acceptance in people, places, and things. I remember being in school and always feeling inadequate because I didn't have the clothes. See, I didn't know that any of those things was what I needed to be who I was, but people brought that to my attention. And because I was resisting the information my mother was giving me, then when people started calling me names and they started telling me that the way I dress and the way I look didn't look right, I started embracing that. So I started feeling inadequate and inferior at a really early age. I started doing all the things I could do to be accepted by people, and it was never enough. I worked hard on being perfect. And it was hard trying to be perfect, and the pain of trying to be perfect was harder than me possibly listening to the simplicity of the life that my mother was trying to give me. So I continued to embrace that stuff. First thing I picked up was cigarettes. Now, mind you, before that, the first thing that I started embracing was some sexual feelings because my brother molested me from the time I was 5 till I was 14 years old. And remember, like I said, that I wasn't one to talk about what my feelings were, to even talk to my mom about what was going on. I kept that secret. But I kept blaming my mom, so I started having the anger, the resentment, and the fear. And in the triangle of self-obsession, it talks about how we falter along the way. I faltered long before I picked up that drug. And so I picked up, you know, the feelings of sexual feelings, and I started waiting for my brother to touch me because it felt good. Because despite the fact that I knew my mother loved me in her way, I never got a hug. So I felt like this was a way of showing that somebody loved me. So I started touching other children. I remember trying to make money. And back then, a nickel was a lot. Tells you my age. And I was washing up this little boy because his mother was lazy. She wouldn't do it. So I remember, and this is what I'm talking about, I kept continuing to try to seek something to fill that hole inside of me. So I started washing this little boy up, and I started seeing his little penis get hard, you know, so I started playing with it, and, you know, and I started being able to, you know, sit on top of him. Now, mind you, nobody gave me any information, but these were acts that just came. It came because my brother introduced me to it, and I began to embrace that feeling, so I became obsessed with that feeling because it felt good. All I ever wanted to do was feel good. So that lasted. Then I picked up the cigarette from the cigarette. You know, I didn't do anything till I was like 18. I didn't know what I was doing. My children's father, he was an addict. You know, they were smoking some PCP. They told me to take a couple puffs. I took a couple puffs. And I felt so foreign that I said, I'll never use anything again. Then at 24, I started smoking marijuana, and I loved it. I loved it. It made me be the person that I envisioned and I fantasized that I would be. Because one of the things that my mom did do was we were talented. So I sing, and she always used to encourage me to sing. And that's the only time that my spirit felt whole. That was the only time that I felt like I was a part of the family. And I remember starting to sing in the clubs, and I had to have a joint in order to get on stage, because despite how well I sang, I was stage fright. So I needed something to make me feel like I could go on stage and sing, and I started doing it. At the age of 34, I had two children in that process. The children's father, he was an addict. I tried to control his life and try to make him not use drugs, because I was comparing myself to him, and I didn't think I was like him, because the drugs he was using was making him nod when mine was making me sing. So every time he nodded, I looked at him and shook my head and said, he don't even know what's going on around him. And then he'd get up, and then he start holding a conversation in the middle of a sentence, and I'm like, he really don't know what's going on in his life. And that didn't work. You know, and I gotta say that God brought me full circle, because at 35, I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous through another person who I was in a relationship with, because like I said, a lot of my life was, you know, I was promiscuous. You know, I liked sex. I had to have it at any cost. I would scope a room and pick out my victims. But before I came here, I thought I was the victim. I didn't realize I was victimizing people, just like my brother victimized me, because I learned from him, and I didn't know that what I learned was going to cause me to come in these rooms, because the guilt and the shame of looking up and seeing all the different men I had slept with, it began to bother me. But I didn't know what to do with it. I would talk to people when we were sitting down getting high, and they looked like, look, you're talking too much, pass it, shut up. So I began to stuff those feelings, and I kept stuffing them, and I kept stuffing them. And it was through the grace of God that God works through people. I believe that. And I was in this relationship with this guy. I was working at this thrift store as a cashier, stealing more money than I was putting in the cash register. And he came in, and I was like, oh, my God. This was my dream. This was the man that I always wanted to be with. Didn't know nothing about him. Saw him and said that I want him. Now, mind you, he came in the store looking for a belt. And he came in there, he had on an electric company uniform, and I didn't even pay any attention to the fact that his uniform was too big for him and he was looking for a belt to hold his pants up, because I ain't paying no attention to that. I gave him his phone number, and he gave me mine, and we started seeing each other, and he introduced me to the love of cocaine. And for 2 years, I let him dominate my life. He, you know, I thought I was a socialite addict, because I didn't have to go out and get it. He went and got it for me. So it allowed me to still think that I was okay, because I didn't have to stand on the corner. I didn't do things that I saw other addicts do. So I thought that I was all right. And finally, you know, after we kept using, and then we started fighting over the drugs, and then I remember he got a package, and, you know, and he asked me to hold it. Now, he asked me to hold it, but he was coming back every half hour asking for some. And I kept giving it to him, and then after a while, he started accusing me of taking some. And despite the fact that I was using drugs, I always had a thing about giving my word. So I never did none of it unless he let me have some. But because he kept coming in high, he kept saying, you taking some of my drugs. And I kept trying to convince him that I was not using any of his drugs. That he was using it so often, and he kept coming back so regularly, I think he kind of forgot how many times he kept coming. So we started arguing over that. And finally got to a point, you know, where I started seeing that, you know, things started getting worse. He had a dog, it was a Rottweiler. The Rottweiler, his bones were showing, the dog was like he was using drugs, like he was smoking. He worked for the electric company and they cut his electricity off. So I didn't have those things happen to me, so I was like, oh God, he is really in bad shape. So when he went into treatment and I went to go visit him on a regular basis, and I was telling him, keep up the good work, you're doing right, you're doing right. At that point, I had started becoming resourceful myself. So I started, you know, being able to get my own suppliers and, you know, hide in the alleys. Because my image, I still had that image. I still wanted people to think I was that goody two-shoes. So I used to meet me in the back. Don't meet me out in the front. You know, meet me up in the alleyway. You know, and that took a lot of energy and a lot of work. And then finally, after he went into the program, and he started finding out that there was a program called Narcotics Anonymous, and they came up to visit him, he started calling me, and he started interfering in my high and my using. They started telling me, hey, I know you're getting your check, because I was no longer employed, but I was getting a DPA check. Again, I was an elite addict. I was number 10. And you know, number 10, you get your check in the middle and at the end of the month. So that meant I could use a little longer, I thought. So he kept calling me saying, look, you don't have to live like that. He would start a couple days prior to it. Just got to be annoying. And then I was like, if I take my phone off the hook, you know, he'll know what I'm doing. If I leave it on, he'll know what I'm doing. Half the time, I couldn't talk when I answered it. He said, I know what you're doing. And I'm shaking my head like he could see me. And I'm saying, no, I'm not. I had to swallow 10 times in order to get that out. So he was like, you can live a better way. You can live a better way. So he came home on a visit. And to make long story short, he told me about a meeting, the Starlight Group, at Pulaski and Mannheim in Philadelphia. And I just went so he could leave me alone because I just was tired of him blowing my high. But the bottom line was I had stopped getting high after I started going up to the facility that he was going in, and they started talking about this thing called the disease of addiction. And every time I used, I could see his face in the cloud of smoke. I was like, what is going on here? This stuff is no good. Let me go find someplace else to come. The drugs ain't working. They cutting it with something. That's what the problem is. So I began to use my resources and it didn't work. So I went to the meeting and God knows that it was God that got me there because I felt like I had cinder blocks on my feet. I asked him to come pick me up. And back then, you know, 20, they was like that tough love kind of stuff. And I wasn't used to that because I'm a sensitive person. And he's like, I was like, you want to come pick me up and take me to the meeting? He said, no, get there the same way you went into the cop man. I'm like, I don't know who he think he's talking to. But again, that thing was like, let me just go so I could get in there, so you leave me alone so I could go back and do what I was doing. And when I walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, March 15th, 1986, I saw something before y'all said anything to me. Y'all was smiling. Y'all was hugging each other. Y'all was talking about not only the problem, but y'all was talking about solutions. Yeah. Yeah. I never talked about a solution. We would sit around and have pity parties, and we always tried to figure out who had the worst pity party, and that was the one who got the most drugs. I came in here, and I was looking for sympathy. Y'all said, no, 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 no. We're going to give you empathy because we understand. We know what you've been through. You're not unique. There's nothing that has happened in your life that somebody else hasn't experienced. I came in here with reservations. I walked off of the street, so it don't matter how you get here, as long as you get here, and I let you know what my problem is and how y'all can help me. And I have allowed y'all to help me for 21 years consistently. I have not left this fellowship because I knew that it wasn't me that got me here. Because I was that insecure little girl who didn't know how to even tell you how I feel. When I was angry, you asked me, was I angry? And I was like, no, I ain't angry. Hot as I could be. Calling you all kinds of names, but couldn't tell you that. So I came in the rooms and y'all embraced me. Y'all told me to do something. And I came in here still wanting to use. Now, mind you, I had been using cocaine for over 2.5 years, and the thought of a marijuana did not come to my mind until I came into these rooms. And I said, okay, this is Narcotics Anonymous. They're going to teach me how to use drugs successfully, secretly. And then I got here early, though. So that's the purpose of y'all telling me, get here early so you can get all the information. And y'all said that this is a program where we're abstinent from all drugs. So y'all dispelled that reservation for me. Y'all told me that I wasn't unique, that whatever I went through, somebody else had been there. So that dispelled another reservation. Y'all told me it didn't matter how I got here. I didn't have to come by way of facility because I thought I did because that's what I was hearing people share. So I was like, well, dang, maybe I need to go into one of those places. And then next, y'all said again, it don't matter how you got here, as long as you're here. And y'all told me that if you don't pick up a drug, you won't get high. And I said, damn, these some smart-ass people. I'm so intelligent, I couldn't even think of that one. How come I didn't know that one would be too many and 1,000 will never be enough? How come every time I used and I said I was only going to spend a certain amount of money, how come that didn't transpire? How come if I put my money in my front pocket and one in the back pocket for electricity, the other in the gas, how come it ends up coming together? How come I end up giving it all to the man and looking around and saying, God, please don't let my life get cut off? How come I couldn't think of that? So y'all dispelled every reservation that I had. Y'all told me that this was a disease that was threefold, that it was a physical, it was a mental, and it's a disease that's spiritual in nature. So you told me that what I had to do was I had to come in here and I had to embrace some things. And I had to stop thinking that y'all could not tell me anything. So I had to become teachable. I had to open up my mind to the information. And y'all told me that you had to accept that you was powerless over your addiction and your life has become unmanageable. So what is your life? Your life is the quality and the manner of how you live. What was the quality and the manner of how you live? I used to live and I lived to use. So y'all let me know that that didn't work. So you told me that what I had to do was I had to guard my recovery. It talks about in the first step that perseverance is key to my recovery, that I needed to persevere. So that means that I have to make sacrifices in my recovery. Now, I didn't come in here wanting to do that because I wasn't one of those people that felt like relationship area was not one that I needed to work on. Because I needed to have a man. I needed to have somebody to validate who I was because I had no idea who I was. So 4 months clean, I was in a relationship. He kicked me to a curb for a newcomer. The guy that I came in the rooms with, he realized that he didn't like me no more, so he kicked me to the curb. So then I kept looking, and I'm like, I'm going to find me a man. I'm going to find a man. Mind you, I wasn't a woman, so how could I know what I want in a man? But I kept looking, and I don't have any regrets for any of the experiences that I've had in this fellowship, because I believe that despite what I've been through, despite how many relationships I've been in, I know that this is a disease of addiction, and I know that this disease is always looking for me to fill that spiritual void with something. And it wasn't until I did that second step without a minimum concern and realized that I am insane. And you keep doing the same thing over and over again expecting different results. Yeah. So you need to believe in something that's going to restore you. Yeah. And I had to keep going in the dictionary because my sponsor kept saying, you know, your meanings, your definitions is based on rationalization and justification. Yeah. So you go to Webster and get the real meaning. And so when I found out what insanity really was, I began to believe in that power through time. So the third step told me that I needed to make a decision just on a daily basis in something greater than me. Take an inventory of myself. Look at the fact that I have good and bad. Talk about it. Let somebody know because God already knew. I had to admit that there were some things that was wrong with me that I needed to change. I had to be willing to change them. I had to keep bumping my head. And then I began to look at, okay, I don't want to bump my head as often, so what do I need to do? I needed to get rid of the old and put in some new. So the anger, resentment, and fear was replaced with love, acceptance, and faith. I made a list of the people I harmed. I became willing to make amends to them. And God put those people in my life. I didn't have to go out and search for them because God did that for me. You told me I needed to guard my spirit. And how I guard my spirit is take a look at me every day. And I just need to say today that I want to ask that anybody who I have harmed this past weekend, because I can talk a lot and I can say things, to forgive me. Forgive me for anything that I said, because you told me in the eighth step that anybody who comes in my path is at risk of being harmed. And that doesn't change because I got 21 years clean. So I'm asking you to forgive me for anything that I may have said during this convention that may infringe upon somebody else's personal recovery. So I believe that I could begin to believe there's a power, and I want to know what that knowledge is for God, for me, and I make sacrifices in my life, and I no longer grieve men. I used to be in a fetal position, crying about a man and shunning God. Crying about a man, God, why you take this person out of my life? When he took my life, but wasn't praying to find out what God wanted me to do, and that every man that God put in my life was not meant to be my mate. That today my life is happy, joyous, and free because I know that the 12 steps says that through this spiritual awakening that it is not about me, that it is about me helping another addict. And sponsorship is the heartbeat of this fellowship. And as much as some people talk about predecessors not being in recovery, sponsorship is service. It's service, and it's a continued service. It's past the committees and all that because it's done on a daily basis. So I stay in service because it helps me to not be inside of myself. So if you are new, if you're just returning, if you left because you thought social acceptability equals recovery, if you left because you thought the religious zeal was going to get you what you needed, for whatever reason you think that you needed to come back, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. Don't allow anybody to take your right to be a member here. I don't let nobody take my right to be a member here. But despite what I do, despite the shortcomings, despite the things that I have not done, the recovery and the shortcomings that I have, I will come in here and share about whatever I go through. Nobody will put that expectation on me but myself. Nobody. So I stay here. I'm grateful I stayed here because there's more literature. I love the It Works How and Why book. I love the Step Guide. Those wasn't here when I got here. Self-acceptance pamphlet came when I had 9 months clean, and I was going through that struggle at that time. So this is a Just for Today program. Just for Today, I will have people that believe in me and want to help me in my recovery. It's still a simple program for a complicated addict like me. I try to keep it simple. I try to stick to the basics. I continue to embrace people in my life because this program is about relationships. I could not have this program without the fellowship. So I continue to stay and grow along with it, despite what I think it's supposed to be. Thank God y'all didn't let me govern this fellowship. A lot of addicts would have died. So I'm grateful, and I can't always say that, but I know my God knows my heart, and he knows that my intention is to always to try to change, to be willing to change, to allow people to help me to change. 21 years later, help me to change, help me to change, and I cry out for help. That's an easy word, help. That will cover all bases. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being my vision of hope. And thanks for letting me share.
Let's bring my next, I'm an addict named Kay.
Okay.
This next speaker that I'm going to introduce, in the neighborhood where I grew up in Harlem, this gentleman was my role model. He was a predecessor. And he was a guiding force in my recovery process. And I have a lot of respect and admiration for him. I give you John Kay.
Hi, my name is John. I'm an addict. Can y'all hear me? Good. A heartfelt message. That was a heartfelt message. And I'm going to tell you, I thank the convention committee for asking me to participate in my recovery and maybe affecting one of y'all. But I know the bottom line, when I leave here, I got the love that I needed. I want to thank my wife for being my wife, for hanging in there. You doing good, kid. I want to thank my sponsee, Farrakhan, for sharing such an eloquent message earlier before this meeting. And his wife, Ann, for putting up with me. Because like Zakiya was saying, Sometimes on this road, you hang out with people. You become who you are. Does my inside match my outside? And sometimes when you hang out with people long enough, you're going to find out who their insides are. And part of my insides right now, what I'm going through, is this self-righteousness sometimes. Full of information. So when you're full of information, and you're getting props on the job, and you're getting taps on the back, then your way is the way. So I hang out with my friends and my wife, and they tell me, your way ain't the way. And I don't like that shit. Listen, my clean date is August 23rd, 1982. That gives me 24 years and 8 months clean. Y'all can clap, y'all can clap. That's some hell of a clean time. Come on now. But you're not clapping for me, you're clapping for God, and you're clapping for you. Because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. I know I couldn't have persevered without you. I know that. I'm clear on that. Clean time is not a rank. It's a privilege. And y'all have given me the privilege to take 24 years and 8 months of this thing and try not to use no matter what. When I was listening to Zakiya, she was sharing my story. But then while she was sharing it, something hit me over the head. We seen my man who's a predecessor in here. Listen, we need to respect our predecessors.
Right.
He looked into the meeting. My man Melvin, love you, brother. Love you, man. Keep paving the way. This man got, how much time, clean time you got, Melvin? 19 years. Let's hear it for him. You can clap for that, too. Listen, I got to ask people their clean time because I can't keep track of yours. I got hard enough to keep track of mine. But he got 19 years clean, and every day he's in a meeting. And he's going through some situations. When I see him, I reach out to him. Because sometimes your predecessors, listen to what I'm getting ready to say. Sometimes your predecessors might not have more clean time than you. But they have proceeded to do some work in some areas you haven't done work in. Check that out. That I don't mean if you got 3 months, don't tell me no shit after the meeting. I don't want to hear it. I ain't asking you for your information. I'm letting you know, though, that I can get help from people with less time than me. Do my insides reflect my outsides? They didn't. I had a mask on. It was only until I came in here and I started peeling the mask that y'all let me be who I am. Because when I was born, I was messed up from day one. My mother was a light-skinned black. She almost looked white. I mean, wait. Yeah,
that was it.
I've got who my mother was for a minute. See, there's a lot of people in here. And my father was dark as the night. And I came out looking like this. So check it out. I know some of you can identify. I hang out with the whites, they call me black. I hang out with the blacks, they call me white. I hang out with the Puerto Ricans, they speak Spanish to me, and I was all fucked up. Always uncomfortable in my own skin. Listen, I didn't get no comfort. My insides was tore up from the day I was born, it seemed like. And the only comfort I got was when I was introduced to my first drug. I'm telling you. I had to go through school uncomfortable. You talked about, you know, people buying clothes and wearing things. I went to school. I just wanted to fit in. All I wanted to do was just fit in. So I went to school. And my mother, who was a wonderful parent, still is today, always wanted the best for me. But I just wanted to fit in. So we was wearing peacoats at the time, right? Well, let's not say we. Everybody else was wearing peacoats at the time. Blue peacoats. That's all I wanted. A blue peacoat. Mom, could I get a blue key peacoat? They got the money. Instead, she gives me a peacoat. But she goes to another store, a fabulous department store, and gets a gray peacoat with gold buttons. And I had to wear that to school. Now it was a fly peacoat for somebody else. But I just wanted to fit in. So my insides again did not reflect my outsides. Because I kept wearing things that, first of all, I felt uncomfortable with the inside. So no matter what you wear on the outside, they said a monkey in a tuxedo is still a monkey. Well, I was a monkey for a few years until I met my first drug. I got some comfort. I got some comfort. I was at a party. I got tapped on the back because I was scared to death. We were dancing slow and, you know, going down to the ground. And I said, oh, I want to do that. So I took a risk. But my inside told me you better not try it. Because I was fearful. But on the outside, I wanted to let you think I had it going on. So I went over there and asked this girl to dance, and I started grabbing her real tight and following what I seen this brother was doing. And I tried to go down to the ground, and my legs started shaking and trembling. And I was embarrassed, humiliated. And I said, hey, hold on, baby, I'll be right back. And I ran out of there, and I said, I'm getting out of here. And my brother and his crew stopped me outside and said, where you going? I said, I'm going home. I can't handle this. They said, here. And they introduced me to my first drug. And after I drank this beer, a warm sensation came down over me and a feeling of confidence. And I went back in that party and I grabbed that girl. And my legs stopped shaking. I was like, wow, this program works. And then I seen the brothers whispering in the girls' ears and, you know, getting their phone numbers while they were dancing, and I tried to say something, but nothing would come out of my mouth. So I said, hold on, baby, I'll be right back. And I ran outside and got another beer, and I came back and I was able to talk. I know some of you can identify with what I'm talking about. It went from beer, wine, scotch, vodka, rum, gin, to smoking reefer, to sniffing dope, to skin popping. I met cocaine, I sniffed coke, I shot coke, I shot dope and coke together. I met methadone, I fell in love, I stayed on that for 10 years. I took all kind of pills. So when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I found out my drug of choice was high. I did everything I could to get high and stay high. I never used crack, but I see crack is growing hair. No, I'm just kidding. You up? Oh. But anyway, that's another story. So what happened to me was that the comfort that I felt while using, I was scared to stop. Because my inside told me if I stopped, okay, that I couldn't handle it. That if I stopped using, I was going to be like a hole in a donut. I remember I met a girl one night, and I was shooting dope at the time. And we went to bed, and she woke up with a smile on her face. She said, damn, what'd you have last night? And I ran out and got 20 more. But the problem was I always needed 20. And I was scared to stop because I knew without drugs I was going to be a hole in a donut. But I suffered, and I prayed for a place like this to come to, but I didn't know I was praying for Narcotics Anonymous. I wanted people like y'all in my life, like Rodney and Tashima, and Reggie and Dion over there, with her new fiancé. I prayed for y'all. I prayed for y'all. And God blessed me to come into this meeting, and come into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, with some upstanding citizens like yourselves. Listen, there's going to be addicts dying on the corner, never knowing how it feels to stay clean for 24 hours. But even worse, there's going to be addicts dying on the corner, never knowing how it feels to even sit in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Never think about a convention. I mean, this is standing room. This is sold out. We sold out. Listen, one left, send another one in. Oh, I could fuck up, and I still have a full house. I like this convention, Danny. Don't go, don't move your car. You'll lose your seat. Let it get towed later with it. Don't worry about it. Get another car tomorrow. Don't go to the bathroom. Pee on yourself. No, just kidding. But look, my insides, thank God we could laugh because we cried a long time. I have something to laugh about and smile about. I have empathy. When I see Melvin walking by, I know he's struggling a little bit. And I don't know if he wanted me to share it, if I could share it, but he's going through his eyesight is going bad. And he suffers from diabetes like myself. And Kay said, "Was that Melvin?" And I said, "Yeah, go get him." And then we just started crying. I don't know why. I don't know why. The empathy, man. That you know somebody that fought hard in this fellowship and continued to fight in spite of themselves and show up. He's a bad motherfucker, man. And I'm going to tell you, right? God is so powerful because I didn't come to 4.5 hours to come to a convention full of folks to cry. But my insides tell me I could do that. God tells me you could do whatever you want to do. Because I'm not trying to please you today. I'm trying to please God. And as I realize my mistakes, because they're plentiful, I try my best to recognize it and take my inventory on a daily basis and unpeel the mask. Because let's get this clear, the mask must go. We no longer need to dress up the outside to make the inside feel better. But don't get me wrong. Early recovery, I had to dress up the outside because I had lost everything. I had to make myself say, "You're going to be better. You're going to do better. You're going to feel better." By what you got on. I'm going to let them slide. They don't know when I'm up here, I'm dangerous. I'll put you on front seat right then. I'll let them get by. Next one, you're in trouble. I'm telling you. Fair warning. Listen, this ain't no comedy show, but I ain't no joke. Don't be walking out on me. That's a bad rating right there. I'm from New York. I might got a Pittsburgh Listen, it don't matter what I wear. Guy said, "Yo, man, you from New York. What you got a Pittsburgh jersey on?" Because I like the color. And my other one was dirty. But I realized when I came in here that this was the place for me. That y'all fanned my desire. You fanned it. Come to a meeting and a convention so powerful like this, or see y'all walking by talking about you got clean time. Listen to Marsha's tape and telling me and inspiring me. Inspiration. Y'all fanned my desire to stay clean. Because I'm going to tell you how it was for me in here. And I'm surprised I'm speaking today, by the way, because I've been blackballed for a little while. How many years has that been now? But no, I'm on the road again. I might not be in a banquet, but this looks like a banquet to me. Picking in some banquets at other conventions right here. Yeah, I like numbers because I like power and I like juice. And I know God flows in meetings like this. I know He touches us. I would like to see some NA logos up here, some signs up here. But it's okay. I can take it raw. Straight up. So listen, I came in here and I got involved in service. And I was hating because my inside didn't match your outside. And I judged your outside because of what you had. I said, it ain't about jewelry because I sold all of mine. Listen, I'm new in recovery. I'm hating now. They call it player hating, We call it resentment. We call it, I forgot what we call it, but we call it all kind of shit. We just mad as hell when you got shit that we don't. Okay? Let me just go there. I sold all my jewelry. It ain't about clothes because I didn't have none. It ain't about a relationship because nobody would have me. It ain't about a car because I was walking. It ain't about a house because I didn't have a place to live. It ain't about clean time because I didn't have none. I was resentful. I was envious. I was jealous. I was player hating. Thank God for the experienced member and the old timer. Or maybe the member that came in after me, came over to me and said, because sharing is taking a risk. You raise your hand in the meeting, you share, you might get some feedback you don't want to hear. So some experienced members came over to me and said, John, you're right. It ain't about all that stuff. But if you want that, you can get that. I said, yeah, but I don't want it. It's a spiritual, it's an inside job. I don't want that shit. They said, but you can get it if you want it. I said, yeah. Look at them. But look, a year went by. All those things I just talked about happened. I got keys to a car that was parked outside. Wasn't mine, it was rented, but I was getting there. I had a suit on. My father let me hold the suit again because I stopped selling his ties. I had keys to an apartment. I had a watch on, my first piece of jewelry. And I had a girl in the front row at my anniversary. She's like, yeah, that's my man, that's my man. And I had a year clean. And I stepped back. And I said, yeah, this program works. But then a newcomer came in the meeting. It ain't about clothes. It ain't about jewelry. It ain't about... Because, listen, one day you could be here, and the next day you could be here. So we're here. When you come here, we tell you to get involved in service so we can fan your desire and we continue to earn your seat. Showing up is earning your seat. And I earned my seat, and I got involved in service, and I showed up. Hey, Joe, what you doing way back there, brother? Can't miss you with them glasses on. Movie star you. But what happened is I came, and they said, earn your seat. So I did service. And I got involved. I remember in 1985, history. We did a basketball fundraiser for the World Convention, WCNA, 15. I think it was, it was 85, so it was WCNA 15 for Washington, D.C. And we had a basketball fundraiser, and Brother Rick and people from, you know, was involved. So I'm not new to this area. Clyde came up with a basketball team to New York, and we made some funds, and we sent it for the World Convention, and we had a ball. Of course, you know, Washington, D.C. lost, but that's all right. New York blew them out. But that's okay. It's not if you win or lose. It's how you play the game. So, I got involved in service, and I made my way up, and then I started getting involved in other areas, and then what happens is I made mistakes. I wound up taking money in Narcotics Anonymous that didn't belong to me, but belonged to y'all. The fellowship that saved my life. Listen, this is mark is still on my forehead. But y'all got it there. I don't have it here. And not even many of you have it there. That's my interpretation some days. But the bottom line is that the good part about this whole thing, I was able to face up to the music. And you know that word amends? Thank God we got a nice self, make amends. But addicts like that word restitution, pay us back. And I was able to pay every cent back that I owed, that I took. And I had that drama happen to me, and I thought that was going to be the worst day of the rest of my life, because I was going to meet, let me know when I have 5 minutes. I'm rolling. So, they getting smart now, they going out the back door. At least they was paying attention. And I thought that I would never be able to face y'all again. Listen to what I'm saying. If you're going through a negative storm right now, or your name is ringing on a negative scale, or if you don't feel you're not living up to your recovery, and you go into the meeting, because I used to go into the meeting, I see people whispering in the corner and think they're talking about me. And I run back to my sponsor. I say, sponsor, sponsor, every time I go to the meeting, I see people in the circle in the corner and I think they're talking about me. He said, they probably are. He said, but you keep going. You don't let nothing stop you from going to Narcotics Anonymous. Listen, they say there's only two mistakes you can make up in here. The first one is a mistake. Let's get no question about that. Picking up is a mistake. But if you do pick up, the worst mistake you can make is not come back to a meeting and talk about it. That you gotta keep coming. They say you cannot save your ass and your face at the same time. The mask must go. My insides reflect my outside based on being able to show up no matter what. Because y'all have fanned my desire even during the storms. Even during the time when I've had controversy dealing with mobs, figures in recovery. Not a pretty story I have. But it's a true story. A lot of step work needs to be done and continues to need to be done. But I'm so far past where I was. I didn't know when I was where I was at. I was such so deep in a dilemma, clean. That 20 years clean, I got arrested. That was over four years and eight months ago. I got arrested. I'm in my bathroom, getting clean. That's what we do in Narcotics Anonymous. We tell you to come in and make your inside match your outside. But make sure your outsides are clean, so take a shower on a daily basis. I had to know that some basic stuff seems simple to us. Not just get fly for the convention, but you got to do it when you go to your home group too. You got to wash. I was in the shower. Minding my business. Listening to music. And my dog, this vicious dog I got patrolling our house, me and Debbie. Right? Well, actually, he's a little Yorkie, right? But he barks like hell. So this day, a bang on the door. My wife comes to the bathroom door crying, John, the police is here. Listen, I wasn't surprised. I wasn't shocked. Because I knew I was sharing clean and living dirty. I knew how I was living. I knew the possibility of the consequences. So my dog didn't bark at all. I was wondering why he just let him in. If he can talk, I know he's like, oh, they looking for you, they ain't looking for me. Ain't no sense in both of us going. I'll be right here when you get back. I'm just imagining what this dog would say. And I was locked up. Thank God for Narcotics. Now, we talk about gangs in here. Because our streets are flooded with gangs, but we got the biggest gang in Narcotics Anonymous. When you go somewhere, you're going to see one of us. We're everywhere. So I went to the bullpen, and we was in there too. said, welcome. I got another day clean. Scared to death. Listen, I'm talking about, this is a guy that's last been told me I don't need to do no more time. And after that 48 hours was up, I realized what it meant to do some time, hardcore time. Because that's all I could handle. So I'm in there, and I want to come to a close. I want to tell you how my insides match my outsides. Because I was in a meeting sharing about being fearful, having to do time in jail with an unprecedented bail of an astronomical cash bail that I faced. And how God, in back of the judge, we ain't got nothing on this wall. But in court, it was something powerful. And it said, in God we trust. And that's all I focused on. And that astronomical bail, something happened where God intervened. And he said, rather than $50,000 cash, he needed 3 signatures in the court that were willing to sign a $100,000 bond that if I skipped town, they would have to pay and be responsible for. And my brother, who's a Muslim, he put his hand up right away. Then I looked at my wife. And I said, well, shit, I know we had sex the night before. She better put her hand up. Then I thought about it, it was a little quick, right? So I said, please put your hand up. I'll be better next time. And she put her hand up. And then y'all, Narcotics Anonymous, the biggest gang that I've ever been a part of, might not have been you, raised your hand. My Angelina, I call her my angel, had everything to lose and nothing to gain, and signed for me, for y'all. And she got it. She caught hell for that. Why you signed for that, motherfucker? You ain't shit. She said, because God told me to. And I walked out of that courtroom. I did not go back to Rikers Island to face the release. I walked from the courtroom, another unprecedented thing that the judge said, release him right now. And I had to pay my debt to society. I talked about the 9th step. I talked about my insides, right, and how I couldn't handle it. But I had to repay society because I owed. I did something that wasn't. You ain't got to give it to me. Thank you. Acting like you writing and all that. You know, I see you right here, Kay. Yeah, ain't this some shit? I love Kay, man. Kay, man, you are the apple of my eye. You really are. You're a wonderful person. And me and my wife both love you. We both adore you. And you just keep doing what you're doing because it's going to be all right. So can I get another 5 minutes now? I know how to work the chair for you. Yeah, I know how to work it. Watch. I ain't going to look back in that direction. No, I'm going to respect the time. And I'm going to tell you, right, that to make a long story short, I went through that situation and God seemed fit. Instead of me doing an absorbent amount of time that I was able to go to jail for weekends. Listen. Yeah. Oh, you woke up now. Hey, check it out. Ain't no barbers in jail either, bro. You better stay up. Going on a Friday to Rikers Island and come out on Sunday and go to work. For a year. God knew I could handle 48 hours. They call them weekend warriors. intermittence. Some of y'all can identify with that. But try not to repeat it clean. And God was good. And I'm going to tell you, I want to close with this. That we are so powerful. I talked about this powerful game that we have. Narcotics Anonymous is everywhere. If you're fearful and you need help, there's somebody there. Carol P., I love you. Thanks for being there. Thank y'all for being there. I might not mention your name, but I mean you. And when I look at you, it's a heartfelt message from one addict to another. I'm sincere in my message. I'm able to cry and be empathetic for others. I'm able to love you in spite of how I feel certain days. I'm able to get through the reason of losing everything. I lost everything. 2 cars, money in the bank, all of that. But I didn't lose my clean time. Listen. And I didn't know I got so much more because I didn't know God was all I needed till he was all I had. Listen, I know you can identify what I'm talking about. I came into the South Mall, 80 men in Rikers Island in the South Mall. And I walked by and, you know, I'm still new to this thing. So they told me in the meetings when I was sharing my ass off about going to jail, listen, they said just when they say on the lockup, on the lockup. When they say on the chow, on the chow. When they say on the count, on the count. Just get in line and do what everybody else do. You ain't going to have no problem with your personality. You're going to be all right. So I'm walking. I believe them. But my inside saying, I'm scared to death. But not do I want to reflect that on the outside in Rikers Island. So the mask must stay. So I get to the South Mall and I walk in and there's a guy, Spanish guy on the bed, reading the basic text. Listen to this though. So I walk by and I said, nice book. And I kept walking. Now why did I say that? This guy went crazy. He said, oh, you know that book? Oh, come here, come here. Here, sit on my bunk. Let's read it. Hector was his name. And Hector, I said, well, this must be a message. And I know that God ain't going to give me more than I can handle. I sat on the bunk, listened to this guy talk about the 11th step. Talked about money, property, and mercy. He was talking about these great things. He knew the book. He knew the book. He went through the literature. And then Hector said, man, oh, I got to go now. I said, well, where you going, Hector? He said, I got to go to Keep. I said, well, what's Keep? He said, that's the methadone program. He said, but I'll be right back. So I tried to hide from him for the rest of the evening, right? But look, the funny thing about Hector, God put him there for me. Because in the morning when I was leaving, on Sunday morning, I packed up. I had all my stuff and ready. The CO called me, I'm coming. And I'm packed up, ready to go. And I'm getting ready to front, get to the control building where Debbie works. And I'm going over there. Hector wakes up. He said, John, you leaving? Now all 80 men wake up. He said, come here. Give me a hug. Now listen, Rikers Island, South Mar. 80 men in the middle of South Mar. He wants a hug. But because Narcotics Anonymous is who they are, because I got to carry the message in all my affairs, I had to go to that brother and hug him.